Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today says the next big engine of U.S. growth won't occur in the country's largest metropolitan areas, but from a number of mid-sized cities throughout the Midwest, cities like Tulsa and Oklahoma City. Both cities have seen renewed vigor and investment in their city cores after decades of stagnancy and suburban sprawl. My guest was part of the revival of Oklahoma City, former four-term mayor Mick Cornett. Although he failed in his quest to become Oklahoma's next governor, he's bullish about the state's two largest cities, as well as cities ranging from Chattanooga to Des Moines to Sacramento, and writes about Oklahoma City's revitalization and other cities' experiences in his new book, The Next American City, The Big Promise of Our Mid-Sized Metros. It's published by Putnam. Cornett served four terms as Oklahoma City's mayor from 2004 to 2018. He's best known for helping Oklahoma City attract the NBA Thunder franchise and putting Oklahoma City on a diet to lose a collective million pounds. He also led the effort to pass MAPS 3, an $800 million civic infrastructure investment in parks, urban transit, wellness centers, and downtown amenities. He'll be speaking about his book Friday evening at 7 o'clock in a BookSmart Tulsa event at the Unity Center of Tulsa at 1830 South Boston. Mick Cornett is my guest today. Mick Cornett, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
You've written about the promise of America's mid-sized cities in both the Midwest, Oklahoma City as a case point, and along the coast as well, away from the major population centers. So what are the strengths of these cities in today's economy?
Well, I think they're very attractive to the millennial generation and the generation coming in behind them. Largely, it's that search of the American dream. It's a lower cost of living. It's a lack of traffic congestion. And in many cases, it's the availability of fresh water and clean air and a lot of those natural amenities, you know, that people on the East and West Coast don't take for granted. And yes, your point is right on. This book is about how cities like Oklahoma City and Tulsa and Des Moines and Little Rock and Wichita, they're all poised to succeed here over the next couple of decades.
You know, you write a lot about migration trends. In fact, how for many generations, people migrated to places like Southern California or San Francisco for tech or for finance. You go, obviously, to the New York area. But what's interesting is in today's day and age, if you are a young person, at some point in your 30s, it becomes unaffordable to live, have a family. And a lot of those people are ex-migrating back to places where they came from or to different places.
Right. And you do see a lot of cases where a young person might grow up in Tulsa or Oklahoma City and they want to leave and they'll go off to the places you mentioned and then they'll come back. And I think it's kind of a healthy, you know, stage of their life, but they're coming back for the reasons that, you know, most people originally left. It's a chance for a better life. And, you know, life in Oklahoma City and Tulsa, just to take those two metro areas, the quality of life there, the quality of the housing stock, the availability of a good public education in many of the districts, the quality of the churches, the quality of the retail, the quality of the infrastructure. You know, we might criticize them because it's, you know, we live in these cities and we see them and somehow we think that it must be better other places. It's not. I mean, when you get right down to it, it's not better than these other places. And sometimes, you know, you have to go to these other places and live there a while to learn that Oklahoma City and Tulsa and a lot of other places in these mid-sized metros have a less hassle environment. And, you know, you spend an hour a day in your car each way going to work in gridlock. That's not fun. That plays on your quality of life. And yeah, you might make more money in some of these other places, but your dollar doesn't go as far. I mean, the type of house you can buy in Oklahoma City or Tulsa is amazing, the housing value. So anyway, sometimes it takes a while for a person to realize these things. But going forward, the percentage-wise, the population growth is going to take place in these mid-sized metros and not in the big cities.
You referred to four middles when you talk about mid-sized metros. What do you mean by the four middles?
Well, part of it is kind of a move toward politics that is more concentrated on solutions. And some people would say that's a centrist form of politics, and maybe it is, but what it really is, it's results-based. In other words, I think in cities and effective mayors, they're trying to get things done. You know, you can't always, you know, stand on your core principle and expect to get everything you want. You've got to be able to, willing to compromise. And so, I mean, that's one of the middles. I mean, that the realization that real things are happening in these cities, and they're not having the gridlock that a lot of state governments and federal governments are experiencing.
You know, I was talking with a fairly well-known architect in Seattle. You know, you actually use Seattle as a success story, but actually Seattle may be a victim of its own success now, because one of his biggest concerns is he has a large architectural firm, and his mid-level architects, he has trouble keeping them because of the incredible housing prices in Seattle, with the success of Amazon, of Microsoft, of Google, and other places that have a significant presence in Seattle, to the point where he can't afford to pay them as much as they need to be able to buy a single-family home. And he loses them back to the Midwest. Is this a big issue for a lot of these coastal large communities that are seeing exorbitant housing prices, and the quality of life issue could affect them negatively?
Yeah, what generally happens is you have these communities that go through a very high level of growth. Seattle's a good example. Austin, Texas is another one. It takes a lot of careful planning to be able to handle that type of population growth. And then you kind of reach an era where people are reluctant to change. In other words, they like the way it used to be, at least in their minds. And so then they, once you start being unwilling to change, well, then the problems only exacerbate because you're not addressing the needs of the community. And Seattle is going through that right now. You may recall that Boeing shut down a branch of their operation and moved the engineering jobs to Oklahoma City for that exact reason. I mean, the cost of doing business on the West Coast is going up. When your employees can't find the type of housing they're looking for, that plays into the business model, and people are looking, business leaders are looking for other markets to grow. It doesn't mean corporate headquarters will move around any more than they do, but when you start expanding, or when you start, you know, a new operation or a new branch of your really large business, there's a really good chance you're going to look around the country and say, well, where else can we go where we can hire people and the quality of life is going to be good, so they're not going to leave our company? And that's where these mid-sized cities like Oklahoma City and Tulsa are going to benefit.
One common theme that seems to go through a lot of the cities that you write about in The Next American City is that cities almost need to be on the ropes before they can re-envision themselves. Again, I'm sure you'll talk about Oklahoma City, but just going back to Seattle for just a moment, we think of Seattle as being an incredibly successful city, but in the mid-70s, you had the end of space race spending at Boeing. You had all of a sudden increased environmental ethos. So logging, traditional sort of extractive industries in the Northwest were suffering. You also had the end of spending on Vietnam, again, affecting Boeing and aerospace giants. They were on the ropes.
And they had invested heavily in nuclear energy, you know, back before that kind of turned on them. So, yeah, I mean, they had, what I call is, ultimately, you reach the advantage of desperation. Oklahoma City went through that, you know, after the 80s were such a poor economic time for Oklahoma City. It was affected, you know, more than even Tulsa was. I know Tulsa wasn't experiencing a lot of good times in the 80s, but Oklahoma City, it was like the Great Depression. And the advantage of desperation is that when leadership goes to the people and says, look, here's a solution, you don't have to convince them there's a problem. And one of the aspects of change leadership that people miss is that people have to recognize something needs to change. I've been to a lot of cities in my speaking tours, and people will say, this is what they want to do. Leadership will explain to me what they want to do. And I will ask, well, does the general public know that's a problem? And they'll say, no, they don't even realize what a problem it is. And that's what I message. Well, then you're going to have a tough time convincing them that they need to change something if they don't recognize there's a problem. And there's an advantage of desperation out there. When things get so bad, everybody realizes it's bad, and then you can offer a solution. It's a two-step process in change leadership. And Oklahoma City had the advantage of that in the 1990s.
We're all familiar with MAPS here in Tulsa and its success in building a living downtown and really just a face changer in so many ways for Oklahoma City. But to understand MAPS, you say you have to look at a prior failed effort in Oklahoma City, and that was the city's failure to attract a United Airlines maintenance facility In fact, despite the fact that Oklahoma City had perhaps the very best offer being offered, that facility went to Indianapolis. Why was this the key to Oklahoma City's future?
Well, Oklahoma City, it seems like, always has to learn the hard way. And in the late 80s and the 90s, you had a business-minded mayor named Ron Norick who came to office saying he was going to create jobs, and he went right out and spent over a year of his time working on a series of incentives to inspire United Airlines to bring this huge economic development opportunity to Oklahoma City. And ultimately, despite this incredible amount of incentives at the state level and at the city level, United chose Indianapolis, as you mentioned. And, of course, the mayor wanted to learn where did we go wrong. And what happened was they had sent in some mid-level executives to spend some time in Oklahoma City, and they kind of came to the conclusion they just couldn't imagine their employees living there. The quality of life in Oklahoma City had sunk so low by 1990 that Oklahoma City couldn't buy the allegiance of corporate America at any price, seemingly. And so that's when they went back to the citizens and proposed MAPS, which was an opportunity to invest in themselves. Oklahoma City was trying to get somebody to come in and save them. And what they realized is, look, no one's going to come in from the outside and invest in us until we invest in them. And MAPS was the beginning of that emotional and physical turnaround.
The idea that cities should invest in themselves for the benefit of its citizens, that can be a hard lesson for cities to learn. Some cities seem to learn them instinctively. Others always look to the outside to create opportunity. What is the benefit of cities investing in themselves for the benefit of its citizens, as opposed to going out and trying to buy businesses to come there or find a way to lure businesses to a
city? Well,
I
think the paradigm shift is that now economic development is really the result of the quality of life in your community. Because if you can attract highly educated people, especially highly educated 20-somethings, to live there, then the business community is going to succeed. It's a very entrepreneurial generation, for one thing. And then secondly, even if it's not the entrepreneurs that you're attracting, they're going to be able to create value for the employers of the community. People in big companies spend a lot of time and effort and money now training their employees, and they can't afford to locate in cities where they're going to lose employees, not because of the company, but because of the city where they've located their jobs. So quality of life is more and more an important component in creating economic development. That's why you've got to invest in yourselves. And that means infrastructure. It means parks. It means having things to do. It means being culturally relevant. In other words, you know, that millennial and generation and the people behind them, they want to live in a place that has some sort of positive image associated to it. And, you know, all of those things are a factor. And I think with time, I think, you know, that's what the Gathering Place is going to offer in Tulsa. I mean, it's a world-class park that is going to be a difference maker in helping to attract young people and ultimately improve the business climate.
My guest today is Mick Cornett, the former four-term mayor of Oklahoma City, and he is the author of The Next American City, The Big Promise of Our Midsize Metros. It's published by Putnam, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Can you give us an example of how MAPS, once it came to fruition, you write in the book about the first big MAPS project that was finished, and that was the ballpark in Bricktown. How was that a catalyst for the area? You know, we think of it as being a catalyst for downtown, but it really was a catalyst for the whole metro area.
Well, yeah, people may forget now, but you know, 25 years ago, what we now know as Bricktown was an abandoned warehouse district. And there were a lot of people that just kind of shook their head when they heard city leaders wanted to invest in it. I mean, it was unsafe. It was a part of the city that you didn't even want to park your car and leave it. And here, they were talking about building a ballpark and then that canal, you know, that seemingly, you know, I think people were concerned it would even hold water. And so, you know, that took some vision. But, you know, ultimately it's turned into the top entertainment district in the region. 7 million people a year now visit Bricktown, and it's become an economic driver. And, you know, there's few economic development drivers better than tourism, because it brings in dollars from other places and they're deposited and then people leave. It's like the ultimate economic development game. But when the ballpark opened, it was almost as if people's expectations had been exceeded for like the first time. Government in Oklahoma City hadn't built anything worthwhile and of quality in a long, long time, probably decades. Oklahoma City went through a very value-conscious period after World War II. You know, they tried to build things as cheaply as possible. And I understand you have tax dollars and you want to, you know, spend them wisely and efficiently, but they also had a very forgettable and regrettable city, you know, decades later. And corporate America was no longer interested. There was no sense of style and design, you know, wasn't properly valued. And I think people inside the city of Tulsa don't realize how Tulsa has always had high standards for things that it did. And Oklahoma City went through a period of low standards that lasted for decades. And it's only been recently that Oklahoma City has had higher standards for itself and is now recouping some of that benefit.
But I think Tulsa does share that conservatism. I'm not talking about political conservatism. I'm talking about conservatism as in we want to hold on to our wealth. We don't want to invest in our city for the benefit of our citizens. I think Tulsa had that as well for at least a generation or two. One of the things I was really struck by was your talk of a lost generation in Oklahoma City. You were talking about your classmates at Putnam City and how most of them went to college and most of them left the state, never to return.
Mm-hmm. I graduated from high school in 1976, and if you play out the timeline, my classmates would have been receiving their advanced degrees in the 1980s. And Oklahoma City just didn't have jobs that measured up to that educational attainment. And Tulsa had more, and so a lot of my classmates are in Tulsa, but probably there's more of them in Dallas or in Texas than anywhere else. And, you know, I think we forget the impact of losing a generation of your most talented young people. And Oklahoma City went through that in the 1980s. When I have a high school class reunion, there aren't that many from local areas, especially, you know, the highest attainers out there. And that's, I don't know how you quantify the impact, but there's a huge impact when you lose your most talented people. Now there's this sense in Oklahoma City from young people that they want to stay, that they like Oklahoma City, and they'll go off to college and but have a much more likely to bring them back after college. And that's a very important component of building a community and getting buy-in in the community. You know, there's a lot of negativity when people are losing their kids. You see that in a lot of rural areas all over the country. You know, promising young people go off to college, they don't come back. And when it plays out in big cities too, it's especially disappointing.
You spend a lot of time in the book talking about maps and then comparing it to other cities around the country that did similar things on a variety of fronts. But can you tell us when maps actually had a quantifiable impact on a business deciding to locate in Oklahoma City? Can you point to a project or a point in time when all of a sudden businesses that you could offer them superior benefits package to relocate to Oklahoma City wouldn't even consider you? Can you sort of mention a point where business did want to come to Oklahoma City?
Yeah, in the summer of 2004, Dell Computers decided to bring a couple of thousand technology jobs to Oklahoma City. And that was kind of a turning point because Oklahoma City had kind of missed out on the tech boom of the late 1990s. And we were, you know, very underserved in the technology sector. I went down to Austin to help close that deal in the summer of 2004, and I remember the site locator kind of taking me aside, and he wanted me to see the campus in Round Rock. But one thing he said, we spend a lot of time and money training our employees, and we cannot afford to locate these jobs in places where people will leave Dell, not because they're dissatisfied with Dell, but because they don't like the city where we've located the jobs. And they realized that Oklahoma City had just started to create the type of quality of life that people could appreciate and that they could hire to. And then that was followed up, I think, largely by Boeing. Boeing shut down facilities in Long Beach, Seattle, and Wichita and moved the engineering jobs in. And Continental Resources, you know, from outgrew Enid and then eventually decided when they had offers on the table from other big metro areas to locate those jobs in Oklahoma City. I don't think any of that would have happened without maps. Maps changed everything about Oklahoma City because it gave people a quality of life that could compete or outcompete other competitors.
My guest today is Mick Cornett, the former four-term mayor of Oklahoma City. He unfortunately failed in his gubernatorial attempt, but he is the author of The Next American City, The Big Promise of Our Midsize Metros. It's published by Putnam, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Another theme that comes through the book is this idea of entrepreneurship as a way of building a city. Young professionals, young risk-taking business professionals, building a city through a variety of small businesses. As you well know, we've had a lot of excitement across the country at a prospect of a second Amazon headquarters. Huge competition to land that. Which is the best way to build a city? For all the excitement of a huge headquarters, can entrepreneurship do the same way on a small business level?
I think it's actually a better way to concentrate your economic development efforts, because you're always best off investing in businesses that are already in the city that can grow, because they're already there. It's really hard to get someone to, you know, to relocate a headquarters. In Amazon's case, it's not a headquarters, but it's a, you know, it's a huge expansion opportunity. And I would just say that you're better off looking at businesses that currently have, say, between 20 and 200 employees. Those are the companies that percentage-wise are going to have a better chance of growth going forward. And you need to make sure and listen to those business leaders about what challenges they have in growth. Is there access to capital? Are they able to find the people that they need to grow? And so, you know, how can the city make sure that the businesses that are wanting to grow have opportunities to grow? It's usually not about money. It's usually about, you know, there's areas that challenge them. And one of the areas is that access to capital, because so much of the venture capital money goes to Boston or Silicon Valley, and very little of it goes to the rest of the country. And there's a lot of efforts out there right now. Steve Case, who was one of the co-founders of AOL, is heading up kind of an investment fund that's looking in the Midwest and the Southwest, and they're looking at opportunities to invest in companies who aren't on the East and West Coast. So I think that's a trend that's just starting to percolate, and you're going to see more success in that area.
I want to mention one other area, which you said was very critical to Oklahoma City's future, and it's also critical to other areas too. You mentioned the story of Sacramento. Sacramento thought they were going to lose their NBA franchise, and Kevin Johnson, the mayor, then came in and helped stabilize that franchise. How important was attracting the Thunder to Oklahoma City's current prosperity?
Well, it saved the brand. When I became the mayor in 2004, I was out trying to talk about Oklahoma City being kind of an ascending economic powerhouse. But the moment I said Oklahoma City, I could see in people's eyes, they were thinking back to the bombing, which at that point was just, you know, less than 10 years previous. And I was thinking to myself, how are we going to build an economy based on sympathy? And so because the bombing took our name, it was the Oklahoma City bombing. And then the tornado in 1999 became the Oklahoma City tornado. Oklahoma City was branded by tragedy, and that's the brand I kind of inherited when I was elected mayor. And so I started making trips to the NBA office in New York and the NHL office in New York in the summer of 04 and into 05. Ultimately, those relationships proved to be beneficial when Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans, and suddenly you had an NBA city that needed to relocate a franchise for a year or two. And I was able to quickly bring that NBA team in because I had already established relationships with Commissioner Stern. And, you know, that's not a model that anyone else could ever expect to repeat. It's never happened before. But I think what it shows is that with the Oklahoma City Thunder, Oklahoma City now has a much more positive image than it did earlier. You're able to associate Oklahoma City with something positive as opposed to these horrific events that the previous brand validated.
You talk about your Oklahoma City brand. It says when you first joined the council, when you were doing some of the maps project, you urged people to refer to it as Oklahoma City in the title. You couldn't even get your city council to go along with putting Oklahoma City on, say, the Civic Center Performing Arts Center that you have that you redid, or the what became the Ford Center.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. We had never protected the brand. In fact, it used to bother me that if you drove around Oklahoma City, it was hard to find the words Oklahoma City. And if we had made it illegal to say Oklahoma City or to put it on a sign, we could not have done a better job. And so I was suggesting, look, we're building this new sports arena, which you said became the Ford Center and now the Chesapeake Energy Arena. Why don't we acknowledge that there's value to those naming rights, and let's call it the Oklahoma City sports arena or whatever. Just let's put Oklahoma City in the name instead of selling those rights to Ford, because we weren't getting a whole lot of money for it. There was, you know, we had a minor league hockey team, but that was the only tenant. And I lost 8-1 on the council. And then turned around, and as you said, we had made some improvements to our Performing Arts Center. It was called the Civic Center. Well, of all the, you know, kind of boring generic names, I always thought Civic Center should be, you know, brought up as a poster child. And I thought, let's call it the Oklahoma City Performing Arts Center as we reopen it. You know, put our name on something positive. And we weren't even selling the rights. We were just reluctant to change. And on that one, I got closer, but it failed. It was a 4-4 vote. We had one council member missing. And then I became the mayor soon after that, and, you know, was able to look after the brand a little bit more. Oh. But I realized how important a brand is, and Oklahoma City's brand was just not helpful in trying to create the economy.
You obviously went to a number of cities in looking at your book, The Next American City, and I know you're bullish on Oklahoma City, and I think you're bullish a little bit on Tulsa as well from what you write in the book and your comments today. But outside of those two metro areas, which city excites you the most of what they have going for them in the Midwest?
Well, yeah, I don't know that I'd pick one, but I think there are elements in Louisville, Little Rock, Des Moines, and then, you know, if you want to get a little bit larger, you know, Denver certainly has a lot of things going for it. But, you know, it's cities that are out there that are accepting to change and, you know, aren't stuck in the past. Knoxville, Tennessee is another one that I think, you know, is doing a lot of good things. But Oklahoma City and Tulsa are the perfect size to kind of capitalize on this coming trend, because they have enough going on to attract people, but they're not so big that they can't, you know, turn things around. You can make good things happen in a size of the city of Oklahoma City and Tulsa. And I think what you're seeing now is a perfect example of that, with the Gathering Place and all of the things that are opening up in Oklahoma City with the new convention center and the park. Things are happening. Difference-making things are happening in these areas.
My guest today is Mick Cornett, the author of The Next American City. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, I have to ask, your plans for the next 4 years have changed somewhat. What's next for you? What's next for you, sir?
Well, the selling this book is the top of the mind for our publisher. You know, they were, I guess, hopeful I would win that election too. But when I didn't, they realized I suddenly had some time on my hands. So I'm spending more time right now out selling the book. And I will be busy, but I'm really trying to put all that together. My wife and I have put everything, you know, emotionally we had into that race. And, you know, you got to be able to take a hint. You know, the voters have decided to move in a different direction. But I'm sure I'll land and take on new challenges. I spent 20 years in television and then nearly 20 years in politics, and I'm ready for this third and probably final adventure in my life. And I'm as excited and as wondering as you as exactly what that's going to entail. But, you know, people are talking to me about some different things, and so I'm open-minded and open.
Former Oklahoma City Mayor Mick Cornett speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa about his new book, The Next American City, The Big Promise of Our Midsize Metros. It's published by Putnam. He'll be speaking about his book this Friday evening at 7 o'clock in a BookSmart Tulsa event at the Unity Center of Tulsa at 1830 South Boston. Details at booksmarttulsa.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.